Your breath keeps me awake. I need no sleep to rest. It feels warm and it feels.
We acknowledge and pay our respects to the Boon Wurrung and Woi Wurrung Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation people, the traditional custodians of the land on which we are virtually gathered today. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders here today.
Travel miles away, letting moments passing by. At this time, all this looks so vain. How simple beauty is.
Welcome to Talent Punk. We're a delightful combination of fascinating guests from all over the world. Adventures, emotion, sublime turns and moves. We at Talent Punk stand in solidarity with those who reject racism and violence. We commit to fighting racism wherever we find it, including in ourselves. So now please join your host, Ollie Lambell.
Well, welcome everyone to our last Talent Punk edition of season 2. Adrenaline C9 H13NO3, known as the fight or flight hormone, adrenaline is released in response to stressful, exciting, dangerous or threatening situations. Most of our guests tonight live with it every single day, taking part in exciting, intense and most times dangerous activities, pushing themselves to their physical and mental limits. Are they only adrenaline rush seekers, addicts or simply mad? Or are they on to something else, more beautifully purposeful? This is exactly what we are going to explore right now tonight with our guest, Lisa, Olga, Anthony, Gordon Morgan, Kalimera, bonjour. So awesome to finish the year with you three.
Bonjour.
Just a couple
Good
of things.
Morning.
Are you guys seeing me?
Yes, I do.
Ah, cool.
Yes.
Yes.
Excellent. Super and Frenchy, just one thing. Matthias, your Super Frenchy will not be live with us on the show tonight or today due to time difference with Oregon, where he lives, but we'll play some of his messages, some surprises, and you'll be able as well to listen my chat with him next week on the Talent Punk audio podcast. First and foremost, Lisa Peters. How are
Hi
you
there.
doing,
Hi,
Lisa?
Avi. I'm doing good. As you can see, I'm sitting on a sunny Austria today. So I'm
Beautiful
doing
sky in
good.
Austria.
Yes, I would love to show you the mountains just a little bit because my balcony is too high or I need a higher chair.
Yeah.
But
So we've seen a bit of a clip of you at the beginning, just to introduce yourself, but would you mind introducing yourself? Just a few words about you.
just a few words. Well, I'm a downhill skateboarder. The reason why I'm here, I think, is because of adrenaline. I'm fully addicted to it. I love the rush which it gives. And yeah, I would love to tell you more about the sports I love. It's like downhill skateboarding. You go as fast as possible down a mountain on a skateboard.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it now for 7 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're born in the Netherlands,
Yes, that's right.
and you moved to Austria, and we'll talk about that. When did you start skating?
I started, I think, 8 years ago on a little penny cruiser. I don't know if you know those more like plastic skateboards, really small.
Yeah.
And I used it as a bike actually to go from A to B. And then I saw videos on the internet of people going down on mountains really fast, and I saw it and I was like, I think that must feel amazing to go so fast. So I searched on the internet for people who could teach me, and suddenly I was inside a really tight community in the Netherlands, actually. Even though we don't have mountains, there are a lot
No,
of
it's
people
pretty
doing the
flat
sport.
over
It's really flat.
there.
We skated down bridges and some little dunes, but it's perfect to begin. And now I moved to the mountains to have
Yeah.
some more extreme roads.
Nice.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit, what's skating for you? What does it mean? What does it bring to you?
What does it bring to me? Well, it brings a lot of different feelings. Like, obviously, when you go down, you're fully focused. It's a weird feeling because your body is able to do those exercises without crashing.
Yeah.
That's kind of a weird feeling. And then when you come down, you really have a big adrenaline rush because, yeah, you can't really do it during skating. You're like trying to survive, and it's kind of mindfulness, meditation. And when you're down, it's the rush, and that's a really amazing feeling. And it makes you really want to go up again and do the same, but then a little bit faster, or a little bit less braking, and you always push the limits on that.
It's like when I was a kid on a fair, the fair ride. You go once, you're scared, and you're like, "Oh, that was fun. I want to go again."
Yeah, exactly. But during the ride, you're
Yeah.
still not realizing how cool it is. Usually, when you reach the bottom, or for example, if you go snowboard, you reach the bottom as well, you realize, ah, that was so cool. I want to go again. And
Yeah.
yeah, that's why it's so addictive, I think.
Craig, when you're ready, we're gonna show a bit of your speed. How fast you're going. We don't have the 104K, but we've got the 80K. So let's have a look at that, and we can have a chat.
Could you be mine?
How nice of you to wave at the bus. Oh, hey.
Yeah, it's like what bus drivers do to each other. I do the same.
And again, beautiful music from Olga. So in brackets there. So tell us a bit about the sensation. What are you going through? The before, the in the middle, and at the end. So what's the preparation for that? For going as fast as you can, or going downhill like that?
Well, for this road, for example, when we drove up, I visualized the road, because you always drive up with the car first to check it for cracks in the road or pebbles or stones. And you try to visualize the roads, like where should I brake, which are kind of sketchy parts where I have to be extra focused. And then when I gear up myself, so I put on my gloves, I close my helmet, I'm not talking so much. It's a bit, preparation for the rundown. And visualizing, breathing, and then once I push down, so the first few pushes, I'm kind of hyping myself up. And I think waving to cars or anything, it gives you a bit of secureness and that you trust on your own skill. Like, hey, I'm there and I have this all under control. It's a bit weird, but it feels like that you show you have it all under control. And yeah, during the rundown,
like you're supposed to be there.
Yeah, it's like, hey,
Rod, I'm supposed to be. Yeah.
Yeah, and during the run, sometimes I enjoy it. Like I can be a bit more chill and enjoy the landscape. But it depends on the road. Some roads I'm really focused and thinking, okay, make sure you brake enough. Make sure you don't crash out. So that's really during the rides. And what I said before, when you reach the bottom, it's just adrenaline and high fives and sometimes even screaming. Like, for example, there was a race where you could go 104 and I was with two others. And during the run, you don't talk because you're focused and you don't really communicate, but you experience exactly the same. So when you're down, this all is exploding. And then you're like, oh, did you see what happened in this corner? It was so nice. And yeah, that's a really cool feeling, I think. But
cool.
I think that's basically it.
So you were a European champion in 2019, I believe, and with COVID, so you haven't competed since. What's next for you? Competition? More competition? Or what's... Is the season restarting in terms of combat, or?
Well, the summer is over. So this year there were no competitions, same as last year. And yeah, I hope next summer, so 2022, hopefully there are races happening again. Yeah, it's depending. Nothing is sure yet. But there is a big event in South America planned, which is called the World Roller Games. And yeah, I hope it's going to happen because it's, I think, one of the sickest events and all the countries are there usually. So it's really international.
Is that mixed guys and girls, or is it just women there?
Well, it's actually, we have a really nice position because it's an open class, which means everyone together, seniors, juniors, women, and the open, which is the men. And then there's a separate class for women. So we actually are able to race twice, the open and the women. So, and usually we don't make a big chance in the open class, but it's still really learnful to practice with the boys as well. And there are actually some ladies who are really doing it really well in the open class. But usually I focus more on the woman because it's more on the same level. And it's really nice because if you're all on the same level, it's really tight racing. So there's not a big gap between the first and the second racer.
And you are in Australia. Sorry. Yeah.
No, how tighter the race, how more exciting it is, of course.
And you are in Austria because of the ski season, so you're a snowboarder as well. You skate, you're ice skating, snowboarder.
That's right. Yeah, ice skating I used to do as a kid, and yeah. I think it's one of the biggest sports in the Netherlands. And my sisters did it. My parents still do it a lot. And yeah, we kind of raced with ice skating.
Yeah.
And yeah, snowboarding here is amazing in the mountains. And in the wintertime, I can't skate. So it's perfect to combine them both.
You are related to someone who we had on the show, Jenny Jangle, one of the Wolf Women. Do you want to talk to us about who are the Wolf Women? What is the movie about the Wolf Women? And what was your experience?
The Wolf Women is a group of five friends, actually. And now we almost all live in Innsbruck, except for Anna. She grew up here, but now she moved to Portugal. And we traveled a lot together and we skate a lot, but besides skating, we share a lot of like other things as well. And because you travel so much, you have a really tight relationship with each other, because we traveled in a van for 2 months, and that's pretty close to each other. And yeah, we made a movie and we drove to Turkey
on a quest,
different quests. You will see it in the movie, I think, when it launches. But we skated a lot of roads there, which were never been skated down, which was kind of special. And you have to search for your own roads, which is, pretty exciting, because usually if you skate a road which has skated before, you have some trust that, okay, other people go down here, so it must be a good road. But if it's not skated yet, it's more exciting, I think. And we went to a beautiful monastery.
Yeah.
And Jenny, she was in the live show before. She lost her dad, and we went there as well to think about him as well. So it was really beautiful. It was really kind of emotional sometimes, because a lot of emotional things are happening sometimes. And she had a crash and Anna had a crash in Israel before. So it made us realize as well how fragile we are. Even though we love the thrill seeking, there are always risks. And actually that trip, we really face them.
So we're looking forward to watching this movie when it's out. Talking about thrill, what's adrenaline for you? And really, it's personal. I think it's very personal for each of you. But how would you define it in you?
In you, I think you can define it as a like a natural high. They call it like that as well, because it's releasing. If you release so much adrenaline, I feel sometimes euphoric, and it's always dangerous, because you always search for something more extreme, I think.
Yeah.
So sometimes I really have to calm myself down, like, okay, Lisa, this is the limit. You had a good day. You don't have to go faster.
Yeah.
But this adrenaline, I don't know, it makes you really happy. It makes me, like, if I talk about it now, I start smiling already, just because it's so... it's really hard to explain. Clear in my mind what the feeling is if you have this rush.
Yeah.
And you always want it. You always want more. And like when I lived in the Netherlands and I couldn't skate, I was like kind of missing this adrenaline. So I started to buy a motorbike just to get the rush, because I couldn't travel. I was like, okay, I want to still go fast. How can I go fast? And maybe with the car is less exciting. So I bought a motorbike and I got a lot of fines because of driving too fast. But it was a really nice feeling. And I always search for it.
Do you have limits?
Yeah. Like, it's a good example. One time I was in Switzerland, and we were planning to film. So you have some like you want to perform good because it's going to be filmed. But there was a road, and I had this feeling, this natural feeling, like I don't feel to skate down this road. There were some bigger trucks going down. The road was not in perfect condition. So I didn't feel it. And then I trusted on my own senses of, okay, I don't go. And it was sad because I didn't get the footage and the result I wanted. But I'm happy that I quit because, yeah, if the conditions is not good, you don't go. And I think you need to have the knowledge of your own physical capacities. And if it's a no, then it's a no.
Do you have a message for the young generation or the young generation of girls out there? But and in general.
A message? Well, I think... Now I have to do it in one sentence.
You can think about it.
It's if you see like videos of people doing extreme sports, people sometimes think, okay, I cannot do that. I'm too scared. And it's not a bad thing if you're scared, because I'm sometimes really scared as well for a road, and I take it super easy. So it's like, if you try it and feel in your body, if you're able to do it, you can do it. But if you don't feel it, you don't have to be extreme all the time. Nice. I think, and it's if you see only extreme videos, people sometimes are like, shit, I don't have the balls to do that. And then you don't try it. And I think, I mean, I started with a little bridge as well, skating down, and it was 20 kilometers an hour. But now I go faster, so... Yeah, it's, if you only see the end results, it makes you maybe insecure that you can't do it. But yeah, you have to start.
Nice, we'll stay with that.
Yes.
Thanks, Lisa. You stay with us?
Thank you too, Ali. Yeah, I do.
Cool.
I'm excited to hear all the other stories.
Oh, cool. Well, now we'll go to Monsieur Anthony Villoni from France. But before we... before we have a chat, Anthony, Craig, when you're ready, can we see just a little bit of a bridge with Anthony? Would you mind introducing yourself, Anthony, please?
Hey, so yeah, Anthony, I'm from south of France, 29 years old. I've been waiting 10 years to make this bridge. And I love doing sport, every kind of sport, like... most often in extreme sport, but like running or doing like every kind of sport since I'm young. I just love being outside and doing stuff with friends. And as soon as it's extreme stuff, it's more by myself. And yeah.
Yeah, you got. I love it because you know, most people will take the bridge straight, but you take the bridge anyway. It's just when did you start mountain biking? Because that's one of your core activity, with as well base jumping now. But tell us a bit about the story of mountain biking.
So I started mountain biking more than 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I was like 11 or 12, something like this. I started like everybody with in a small club and with some kids from my town.
Yeah.
And then as my parents knew I was going, every time there were a jump somewhere on the road, I was going for it. So I had the luck that the first association of mountain bike jump, like freestyle school, was close to my place.
Mm.
My parents put me in this thing, and then since that, I was like going, and after I stopped the school and then went by myself, because it's kind of I don't know in downhill skateboard, but in my sport, like freestyle mountain bike, like you train by yourself in your garden or at your friend's place, and your level is growing up if you train. If you don't train,
yeah. So when did you start the extreme mountain biking? What I call extreme, because I mean, I invite everyone to have a look at your YouTube channel. I mean, there is a mountain of hell. I'm not going to tell, but it's like going down in, you know, with, I don't know how many, 500 other people on a mountain bike. And
Thousand.
Sorry?
It was 1,000 people.
Oh, 1,000, yeah. So going down and racing, and you have a bit of snow, and it's just crazy. So when do you say to yourself, okay, well, I'm doing some tricks, but now I want the next, do you have people you admire, or what happens in there?
So it was, It's kind of strange, but like, so I was focusing on doing freestyle for many years.
Yeah.
And then at one point I was like, okay, I love doing freestyle. The adrenaline I have when I land tricks or new tricks is insane. But at one point I wanted to see some other things.
Yeah.
And I wasn't trained to make like crazy enduro stuff. But I was like, okay, it's mountain bike, so that's gonna be just riding and then being focused for half an hour in a race.
Yeah,
and that was pretty crazy, because that was my first time doing this event in 2019.
Yeah,
and then it went so well. I finished like 15, something like this, and yeah, it was. Kind of mix of everything I like. So you have the rush and the adrenaline of being like 1,000 people on the start gates.
Yeah.
So which is like,
it's crazy.
It's insane.
It's yeah. Crazy.
And everybody rush to be first at the to make the whole shot.
And you've got the AC/DC. I forgot to say, you've got the AC/DC music in the background, which is like blurring. So it's like a party time. Like you see all these guys with their gear on their mountain bike and going down the mountain in snow. It's just like, I don't have footage, but because there's too many footage of you, so I had to choose. Yeah. But I invite everyone to go there.
On this first part on the glacier, we go like. Depends on if you are in front or behind, but it's in between 80 kilometers or 100. And then you're like with 1,000 people like this. And no, that's pretty fun. And then after, you have to do a mix in between like adrenaline, staying focused, and then you have some way up. So you have to like pedal up and...
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy, because like when you do a big effort, after you have such a big way down.
Yeah.
But if you have no more energy, you are black. I mean, you see black, you know, like imagine pedaling as fast as possible during like 3 or 4 minutes. And then after going like with all the people in a way down, saying like, oh, I have to go. I have to pass him. Like in this little corner or cutting here, and yeah, that's kind of mix of in between strategy, keeping energy, and going as fast as possible.
Yeah, we talked about that because you're very good in going down, but going up is where it's your struggles compared to going down. You pass everyone. Yeah. Hey, Joe, when you're ready, take your time. We're gonna show something of Anthony in Paris. Beautiful Paris, but just to see what Anthony does in Paris and in the catacombs.
So that's my artistic side. At one point, it's like going from freestyle to enduro. At one point, I was like, okay, so I know how to do mountain bike, but I wanna do more or make people see more. I don't really wanna. I don't care about being the best or doing something. I prefer showing people place they would never see. And like some people were like, hey, I didn't even know there were a gallery under Paris. And yeah, it's just showing some place people didn't think you could ride mountain bike. Even if it's not like, it's not crazy mountain bike ride. It's just the place which is like pretty crazy, and people love that. And I have, that's what I want to focus now. It's bringing people to some place they just enjoy watching.
Just remember that, because we'll talk about that later on, particularly with Matthias. Base jumping. So you took up base jumping not a long time ago. How long you've been?
Started in March, like straight after catacombs. I finished catacombs on Tuesday, and the guy on Monday, and the guy dropped me a message. Conditions are perfect this week. If you are here on Wednesday morning, we jump. We start the course. I just came back from Paris, dropped all my stuff, all my footage at home, and then I was in a Mio at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, and then jumped at 10 from the bridge.
Oh, it was your first jump? First time?
Yeah, first time.
Oh my God. All right.
The first one is funny. It's a full course. The first one is funny. It's just like how you feel jumping from bridge, but the guy opened everything.
Yeah, he opens. Yeah, you hold the parachute. You open
he held something like everything.
What's adrenaline for you? And think about your answer. And Joe, when you're ready, we want to show your 135K. Speed down a mountain, a snowy mountain, because that's quite unique. What do you think about that, Lisa?
Damn, that's crazy. Like, I know how fast 100 is, but in the snow, this fast is, wow. Yeah, a lot of respect. Really cool to see. I haven't seen this video yet, so I was like, during the video, like, what the? Yeah, cool. I would love to join one time.
Well, there you are. Invite.
Invite.
You can do a duo. I don't know how you do that, but
on the snow.
The thing is, I am afraid about roads, concrete. I am like really afraid about concrete.
Yeah, it's maybe harder, but snow is pretty like impact as well, I think.
Nah, it's like one impact and then you slide. So that's why I don't do it on derps. I do it on snow.
The road as well, it's one impact and you slide. You just
you're open.
You have no more skin after.
Oh, no, I put a tattoo on the road rash always, so you don't see it.
Oh, it's a tattoo of the, yes.
Yeah, it's a comfort.
So what's adrenaline for you, Anthony? So now after watching that.
So adrenaline, like, yeah, for me, it's kind of, it's part of my blood. As I said, since I'm a kid, I push myself doing whatever, and it's just, I just want to see where my, until where my body and my brain can go, like pushing myself. So when I'm doing some stuff, I'm like Lisa. Before it's adrenaline because it's like, oh, is this project is gonna happen or not? And then after, like right before dropping, I'm like speaking to nobody. Like I'm just in my mind doing my stuff, putting my pads and focusing on what I have to do. And when you start, so she push, and when I start pedaling, it's like, okay, go, I go, I go, I go. And then after you have like, it's doing like this, and then whoop, big adrenaline. And then after, depends if you are with friends or doing stuff project by yourself, but like, that's a big rush. And then, yeah, it's always pushing the limit to see where you can go. And there's just one thing I don't want to play with. It's a condition, like wind condition, or if the, as in skateboard, if the ground is not perfect or stuff, I just don't want to take too much risk. I just want to play with the risk, like with my limits, not something from outside. By base jumping, by example, if there is too much wind, I don't jump. If there is too much people down there and the landing is sketchy, I don't jump. It's just like my my limits. And for me, that's, you have to deal with this when adrenaline, sometimes the adrenaline is too much and you stop thinking. But that's where you have to be good and take the good decision. So don't, the goal is to have adrenaline in a long time, not just one time and then stop doing what you love.
What's your thoughts about, or your relationship with death? Is that something that you say, well, hang on, you know, I'm doing some pretty, for the normal human being like me, it's pretty crazy stuff. For you, it might not be crazy, but you know, that limit between pushing the limit or kind of daring, kind of playing with, you know. So what's...
Yeah. So for sure, when you do sport like this, you're playing with death sometimes.
Yeah.
And this question is something I'm dealing with for 2 years now, really asking myself, like, do you want to keep going or just... sometimes you are not in a safe zone. So what's your feeling with this? And I'm like, okay, I do what I love in life. I'm like happy as fuck, like really it's insane at the moment, just like I can live from what I like, so it's the best feeling.
Yeah.
And my relationship with Div, it's not me, it's about people who surround me. I'm just thinking of like, if something happened, like people around me are gonna be sad, but I'm gonna be fucking happy because like I do what I love every second. So I'm like, okay, so they know I do what I love. If something happened, they will know I'm not sad. I'm just happy. And then when I jump from bridge, I'm like, okay, if something happened, yeah, I'm just the 10 seconds of shoot are gonna be intense, and then that's it. And yeah, that's crazy. I'm not afraid of dying for sure. It's something I'm totally okay with because I do this sport.
Yeah.
And I know it's dangerous and everything can happen. I just try to make my sports as safe as possible. So not rushing, not speaking much with people when I'm doing like security stuff. That's why I want to stay focused and not speaking when I put pads or stuff. And yeah, at the moment, by example, my parents, I had a discussion with them for sure when I started base jumping, and they said, okay, so you're doing what you like, but just be really like focused when you do security stuff. It's just what I asked.
Yeah.
By example, I guess Lisa, when you do a road, you check everything before. It's something when you have adrenaline or when you are in your run, you don't wanna something show up like this. Oh, I wasn't prepared for this. Like what I do now, it's something you have to get out. When I jump, everything is okay. I check everything, and when I jump, normally everything is gonna be all good. And then yeah, that's it.
What's next? Any super crazy stuff coming?
Yeah. I have two main projects in same place.
Yeah,
that are gonna come soon for sure. I can't speak about the place, but two crazy one, and then so two crazy one, like I did Catacombs.
Yeah,
so that's main project, and then I have some other project like the bridge or the bobsled track.
Oh yeah,
example.
Yeah.
This kind of line I put on social media. I found some sick stuff, and then I guess one of the main next one like little line are gonna be. I wanna mix base jump and mountain bike.
Stay on that. Stay on this idea, because I think Super Frenchy has got something for you. Your message to the young crazy generation coming up.
So I have two messages. First one is what I said before. Don't rush. Like, be focused, make things as safe as possible, and then you're gonna do it in a long time. So that's what you have to focus on, because yeah, if you do it long time, that's everything is going good, your family is always gonna be on your side, and then you're gonna make things like perfect. And as soon as you have trouble, you start asking yourself, should I continue or everything? So the goal is to make everything safe and then do the dangerous stuff like this. Just try to be as safe as possible.
Nice. So
that's for kids. Make pads. It's not cool to not have helmet in 2021. It's like just protect your brain. And then the other one is, don't care about what people say. Do your stuff. You are yourself. Like you are the only one who know what you want to do in life. Make things that make you happy. You don't need to make everyone happy around you. Just be happy, make what you like, and then you're gonna do everything you like in your whole life. And do not focus about like haters or people who say it's too dangerous, you are crazy, what are you gonna do as a job? Yeah,
it's my job.
Yeah, I don't care about what I'm gonna do. I want to be happy. I don't care about what I'm gonna do in life. And yeah, luckily my parents were on my side and they were the same. They were like, we don't care. As soon as he's happy, he's good. And now I live from what I love doing. So
nice.
That's pretty good. That's the best combo for me.
Nice. Thanks, Anthony. You stay with us?
Yeah.
Cool. Olga. Bonjour.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm very impressed, actually. I'm very impressed. I'm glad to hear these stories and to meet Anthony and Lisa. They are, it's just great what you're doing. I love it.
Excellent.
I mean,
yes. Yeah. Before we...
No, I mean,
sorry. Go.
No, I'm just... I admire them. I just don't think I could ever have the... you know, it takes a lot of courage to do this pose, and I wish I had this courage, and I wish many people also had the courage, because I think this is one of the things that society lacks today. The people don't have the courage. They are like very, you know, laid back. And now with the COVID and everything, and everything is just not doing what he loves to do. So I really loved what Anthony said, and I think it's very important that people should really do what they love to do.
So you have a lot of courage as well to do what you do, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
I just want us to have a bit of a break first before we speak with each other, to watch one of your video. It's kind of an oldie one, but we'll talk about your new album as well. Joe, when you're ready, we're going to watch Hollow Lives. Take it away.
Take your time, but you'll cost too much. It's easy not to be the one you are behind the mask. Your phone's out of batteries and you're still waiting for
Beautiful. Hello again.
Hi.
Do you want to introduce yourself? Or do you want me to do
it? My name is Olga Kouklaki. I'm from Greece. And yeah, I write music, I compose music, and mostly electronic music. And I moved to France, to Paris, when I was like 21 or 22, and I started my career there. And yeah.
I discovered some stuff about your time in France. So apparently you are the most French Greek artist. You've got an intimate link with Paris. Do you want to tell us that relationship with Paris and why you moved to Paris first? Because you come from a classical piano education, I think. Is that?
Yes. And then, no, I mean, there was never like a decision making. I want to move to Paris, or I want to do this or that. It was spontaneous, and it just came naturally because I just simply loved music since I was very young, and I was playing since I was like 8 years old. I was playing the piano, I was writing songs and stuff like that. So at one point I got involved into the electronic music,
yeah,
into the DJing thing, because I really loved all the electronic music things. I didn't know how it was possible to create a song from the beginning. Piano was easy. I was playing piano. Okay, that's easy. You can write lyrics. Okay, that's easy. But how can you create a sound from the bat? So that was what brought me into the electronic scene, and I started DJing and do stuff like that. So I had the chance to meet a manager in Athens, manager from a very famous record label at the time. It was a label of Laurent Garnier.
Yeah, nice.
So he was there with artists, and we were supposed to DJ together at some clubs, etc. And he was like, "Oh, Olga, you know, I have this project in the label, and they need like a keyboard player and a programmer, and I think you would definitely fit that position. Come to Paris." And I was like, "Ah, yeah, of course, yeah, sure, I will come." And then after a few months, he comes back with another artist of the label, and again we meet randomly at the same club, and he's like, "Oh, Olga, I told you I have this project. You really have to come to France," and blah blah. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. But then I started to think about it because I really loved the language. I love French. I love the French composers and French culture in general. So I was like, okay, how would I ever do that? And then third time he comes back with another artist, and he's like, okay, you know what? That's the third and the last time. I'm not gonna come back soon. So you have to pass this audition, and the project is there, but not for very long. Like, either you come or whatever. And so I was like, okay, maybe this is serious, like the third time. And I found this university exchange program.
Erasmus, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Erasmus, exactly, the classic one. And I'm like, okay, let's go to Paris. I will do the Erasmus and at the same time pass the audition and see what's going on over there. And I went, and it was crazy. I was just so passionate about it. It was something new. And it was really, it was amazing years. And I remember I was like very stressed because I had to finish also the classical diplomas and university. And at the same time, I started doing shows. And I think that's where adrenaline kind of hit me a little bit, because when you have like live shows, I mean, of course, it's not the same. It's a very safe performance because your life is not in danger. But you know, you're just out there, and there are so many people, and you have to perform, and it gives you the natural high. So you're like, oh my God, what I do, People like it and people love it. And I think adrenaline also has to do with this element of performance. So Yeah, that's dopamine, exactly, because it's in a safe environment, of course. So yeah, that's how everything started.
Did you play with Lorca?
But Lorca was one of the artists who was in Athens. But we're very good friends. I mean, I love him and everything, but we had different musical road. Like, he's more into the happy house. He's great. He's an amazing producer and artist. I'm more into a dark ambience, but he's amazing.
I like both of you, to be honest. I discovered you when I kind of was searching for, like I do for someone. I found you, and my God, thank you so much for being on the show, because I think you're amazing. Who inspires you? Niels Frahm?
Well, first of all, I have to say it's not a compliment. I mean, I'm not giving compliments very often, but right now I'm very inspired from Anthony and Lisa and Matthias that I discovered. And maybe the next song is going to be Adrenaline after Dopamine. I don't know. But musically, I'm inspired by so many different things. Like, I was inspired from the classical music at one point. Then I was inspired when I was a kid from the new wave stuff, and even rock music, and then I got into the electronics, and today, after all these years, I keep changing my inspirations. Like, right now, yes, I love Niels Frahm.
Yeah.
Niels Frahm, Hauska, and
you say something about the classic in electronic and the electronic in classic, which is that something you want to explore, or?
Yes, I would love to in the very near future, actually. Yes.
Nice.
But it's complicated because it takes so much time. And of course, I have the passion. I have the dopamine, adrenaline, whatever it is that makes me, I want to do it again and again. But it takes so much time. So in order to do something to dare to compare with classical, and it's not easy.
Who's Kid Loco for you?
Kid Loco is a French artist.
Yeah.
He's a very good producer. And when I was younger, I remember I had his CDs, and I was very, I was a fan. Mm. That's simply put, I was a fan of his music. And then in Paris, I had the chance, let's say again, to meet him through a common musician friend. And we met artistically, he remixed one of my songs at the time, which was called Antivirus, whatever. And I really, really loved what he was doing all these years. I think he's a very, very good producer. And then a few years ago, he proposed to collaborate on his own album. So we did two songs together for his album. And then, we keep collaborating
And you've done a collab with him on your new album. We can talk about the new album, Dusty Diamond.
Yes.
Can you... the first time we met, you gave a lovely definition about Dusty Diamond. Why Dusty Diamond, and what was the purpose of this album, and what does it mean?
Well, in general, albums or concepts that don't have a specific purpose. I mean, I don't want to indicate to someone this or that, or not at all. I mean, just my concept was that. I was literally, I remember I was literally looking at a ring diamond or something like that some years ago. And I just had a shift in my own perception, and I realized that it wasn't important for me. So something that used to be very important or very, let's say, pricey or glamorous or whatever, or something that is loved by many people. It was not important to me. So, and then I had this, I started thinking and, you know, about the values that people have, like, right now in the society, because that's something that's really, I think about it very often also with HoloLives, you know, because most of the people I meet every day, they are not happy. They are just not happy. And you are like, okay, what's going on? Like, why you're not? And you realize that they do, works or things in everyday life that they don't really like. They are not proud of it. They don't want to do it. And this has to do with values, because finally at the end, what is more important to you, to be happy with what you do, to be proud of what you are, or to just do something to make other people happy or have money or whatever? I don't know, because even at that point it's not realistic, because then the money they have, it's not enough, and you know, it's a mess. So for me, Dusty Diamond was like this shift on the values that we have, and the values that society projects, and you know, so something that is diamond and very flashy can be dusty, meaning worthless, and the contrary, like you have like something that seems worthless, dusty, so you have something, and then it's so priceless for you. So that was the concept in a way.
Your album, this album is very, it's very dark, it's very deep, very kind of emotional, very poetic. There are a few, well, I mean, we played, you know, Lying in Your Arms. I don't know if it's my preferred one, but I love that song. I think it's just beautiful. I thought it was fitting very well with Lisa's, you know, video. La Nuit la plus tendre, so the tender night, or the most tender night.
The most tender night, yes.
Most tender night with Kid Loco is beautiful as well. And there is Haze that we'll see at the end of the show, one of your, you performing on Haze. These one I want you to talk about, because we're coming close in a couple of weeks is going to be the unfortunate anniversary of the 13th of November and what happened in Paris. So you dedicated a song for the Bataclan. Do you want to just say a few things about
that? Yeah, sure. I mean, I was there and I was invited that evening to Bataclan, and really last minute I just didn't go, and I went, you know, at the neighborhood, but to another place, and I was very lucky for that. So I remember it was a mess, and I went back home and I was very, very scared, and I mean, I wish I had Anthony's bicycle, or you know, Lisa's, you know, you just had to run that night, you just had to run, and it was very weird feeling. So I started to write this track. It's not a song, actually, it's a very tortured production, which is called Friday 13th in the album. Friday 13th, and I named it like that because the evening of the Bataclan, it was a Friday 13th, I remember. So I started like doing cuts and very, very weird and nasty noises, because everything here was a mess, and the violence that I felt from outside, it came inside and then back to the song. So yeah, there is Friday 13th in the album, which is it's not very pleasant probably to hear, like don't listen to it when you have dinner, but it's inspired by that unfortunate event.
We'll listen to Haze at the end, as I said. It's very dark and poetic. Can you give us a bit of a hint on what Haze is about?
Well, Haze is a song about this emotional state that you have when you are like, when you are in, how to say, I don't know with extreme sports if you can combine it, but in general, when you have like an extreme feeling of something and an event that's happening that is very, very strong in a negative or a positive way, sometimes you get lost and you feel like you are in a haze. I don't speak about alcohol or drugs or stuff like that. I'm just saying, you know, like when you are having all these emotions. And I wrote the song one day because I couldn't handle my emotions and I was trying to find a way to how to transcend the self and feel on another level, so you don't really feel the pain, the real pain, the actual pain. So yeah, that's Haze. It's the first single of the album. I love this song, and I'm always impressed. I mean, I don't think it's very dark. It's funny. I don't think it's a dark song. Honestly, I think it's atmospheric. I think it's and it's funny because many people find it very dark, and there are some others who are like, no, it's not dark enough. So, you know, whatever, it's haze. So
it's haze.
And
it's haze.
Just to say one word about the artist who did all this amazing graphic design,
French,
the video clip of Haze. His name is Laurent Kinowski.
Yep.
Kinowski, and he's also doing the graphics for this wonderful French YouTube videos. It's called Data Gueule, oh. And it's very politic and social themes. And yeah, I'm very proud of the video he did, and he's a great artist. Yeah, I just wanted to say his name.
When is the next video of your coming from your album?
I hope soon, like the next month. But right now I'm preparing new live shows because for a long time I had stopped due to COVID and all this stuff. So right now I'm focusing on this, and then I'll see about the next video next month.
Yeah, we're going to see you in Australia, in Melbourne. You know, Melbourne is the first... it's the second biggest Greek city in the world.
Yeah, I've read about that a few days ago, and I was really, really impressed. Like, I didn't know it actually. Yes.
So we're waiting.
I hope
for you.
So. Yeah. I hope so.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You stay with us, please. Now.
Sure.
Joe, when you're ready. So what we're going to do is watch a bit of Matthias, aka Super Frenchy.
I wrote you this letter.
And we'll see each other after.
You need to know that I'm not abandoning you. I love you with all my heart, and you are the son I've always dreamt of having.
The cliff, right over there, straight into the valley. And the chute in a couple turns, up there, turn left, get on the ridge, point it, and then straight to heaven.
Do not get upset if people criticize me. People always criticize what they don't understand. Skiing, surfing, and base jumping have been my existential quest and the pillars of my life. I've been the luckiest man on earth, and the mountains have been a vital force. Death is normal, and we all have an expiration date. A strong man accepts his mortality. A weak man is consumed by his fear of the inevitable. I love you more than words can explain. Ton papa.
So, super Frenchy, Mathias Giraud, bonjour, and welcome to the Talent Punk Adrenaline Edition. First, how are you?
I'm doing well, and you?
Yep, really cool, very good.
Awesome.
And finally, we catch up. I know it's been a while. I've been trying to, to get you on the show for a while now, so I'm super pleased. In a few words, would you mind introducing yourself?
So my name is Mathias Giraud, aka Super Frenchy. That's a nickname I got years ago because I, jump off stuff with skis and parachutes. And I'm a professional mountain athlete specialized in big mountain skiing, ski mountaineering, and base jumping. So it's pretty much a year-round flying circus.
My first question for you is borderline genius or borderline madman?
Well, I think either terminology to define yourself would be a little pompous, you know. So I would say neither. I would say purposeful. Yeah. So yeah.
Nice. Let's get into it. What has triggered your test for risk and danger?
Maximizing life. I think risk is just not risk, adrenaline, whatever, all this stuff, however you want to call them, are just a byproduct. But it's not the purpose. You don't do something because the way it makes you feel. You do something because of the meaning. I think ethos is everything for me. And I think for me, that's risk is just one of the variables or great things, whatever they are. You know? Mm-hmm. So if you do something great, it's always going to come with a huge element of uncertainty and risk. So you got to prepare for that. Because if you don't have the meaning, what is your life worth? And if you have a meaning, well, if you choose not to pursue it, then you or to take your life in this direction, then you're wasting it all away.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the mindset, I guess, the trigger to committing to risk. But yeah, the first rule to taking a risk is to accept the risk. That's the first thing. But it's there's a fine connection between accepting and actually committing to your risk. There's a few steps involved.
So accepting the risk, committing to the risk. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tricky, you know. It's it's a big journey, you know.
Do you have limits? Or what are your limits?
I have limits. I just haven't found them yet. But I think I kind of know where they are. But this one of the things when you take risk is you learn to assess the frame of execution. And as you develop your skills, your frame gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But it can grow only to a certain point. But I think sometimes it's not just about the frame getting bigger. It's about refocusing the frame. So, you know, and so I think right now I haven't maxed out my my frame yet, you know. So it's the balance between pushing your frame as wide as you can, exploring the outer edge of the frame. That's where life really is interesting. Life is not interesting in the middle of the frame. Life is interesting at the edge of the frame. You know, this is really when you fully know what you're capable of, what you actually maximizing and pushing your interests and your passions and your desires to the furthest. Otherwise, I know I'm the kind of person, maybe it's not right for everybody, but I know I'd be the kind of person wondering what if the edge would be like, and if I didn't go there, then I'm wasting it all away. So
nice. I've got a question from Anthony Villoni, who is an extreme mountain bike rider and base jumper.
Hey, Mathias, I hope you are fine. So I wanted to know, what is your relation with fear? What makes you realize that it's way too much and you have to step back with your project or what you attempted? And then while doing scary moves, do you prefer being surrounded by people or being by yourself to be 100% focused?
Two very interesting questions. So fear. Actually, through the movie, you can see the relationship with fear changes. At first, you know, I'm 24 at the beginning of the movie when I'm really jumping. I mean, at the beginning, there's footage of me as a kid skiing, but really when I'm starting to ski base jump, I'm 24. And I'm ignoring my fear. I'm literally, I actually even say it in the movie, I'm putting my fear to the side and going for it. So it's really obviously ignoring the emotions. Then second stage, I thought I was managing my fear. It's probably right around the crash, but all I was doing was just managing my emotion, my anxiety. But by managing your anxiety, you're kind of cutting your emotions with your surroundings, which your emotions are actually your connector to your surroundings. They're the ones that are sending you information that you have to process about your surroundings. And eventually when I went back was the state when I fully embraced fear. I was talking with a friend who wrote a book on fear called The Art of Fear. Her name is Kristen Ulmer. And talking with her, I realized that we actually have a very similar relationship on fear, but she really took the time to break it down, you know, with the lizard brain and all this stuff. And then I realized that actually my approach on fear had completely changed because I fully embrace it now. I really don't care for adrenaline. For me, it's whatever, you know, like it's just a byproduct, you know, it's not what I seek at all. What I seek is purpose, right? And fear falls into that level. It's just, and all you have to do is just welcome it with open arms, because fear will keep you sharp. And I think fear is, I always say now that fear is my best friend, you know, it's what really helps you assess yourself and your environment, which then leads to the second part of that question, which when do you know fear is too much and you back off? I try to stay pretty pragmatic when I'm on a jump. And if I always have anxiety before the jump and fear, right? Fear is always there. Mm. But when I can reach a state of serenity, I through breathing exercises and a ritual of concentration, visualization, then I can get to the state of execution. And if I can't get to this state of ultimate focus while relaxation, really balancing fear and excitement, you really find that equilibrium and you feel it biologically. You feel it, you know, in your head. It's almost like you're very sharp, but almost very relaxed and serene and elated. And it's a precursor to a state of plenitude. And if I can't get to that stage, it means that something is probably really, really wrong and I should probably step away from the jump. Then I try to break it down. And if it's just my mind racing, then I take the time to do whatever it takes to actually relax, you know, and I won't go until I'm ready. So that's kind of how I deal with it. Therefore, when there are people around, the camera crews, helicopters, filming, things like that, I've learned to, because I filmed so much over the years. It's almost become part of the process. So I'm just used to it. I'm just there to do my thing. It's almost like they're on my schedule. I'm not on theirs. So I deal with that. But where I actually gets to me is when I'm jumping with a bunch of other people, when there's a base jumping event or a lot of other skiers and everybody's kind of like, you know, getting each other excited. This is an environment I don't really, I have the privilege to kind of do my thing a lot of the time. And I try to not be, I try to avoid having that group effect, because that could be pretty detrimental. And I've seen it on base jumps, you know, like you're on top of the thing and then someone does something bad. And last thing you know, like they're laying like, you know, motionless in the boulder field at the bottom and you don't know if they're alive or dead, you know, and that's not a cool thing to do. So, or to experience. So I've gone to a couple of base jumping events, but most of the time I try to kind of stay away from there. Or if I'm in that environment, I remind myself to stay extra sharp and even more conservative, you know, so do not get carried away. So that's how I deal with it. I can tell he's done some crazy stuff. He's been around a lot of people. So while doing this stuff, so that probably has been toying with Anthony, you know.
Well, it's interesting because it's interesting. It's interesting to try to put myself in your heads, you guys and ladies. I mean, you know, the same is what triggers these appetites, you know, but you explained very eloquently in a way that, you know, there is a deeper purpose, there is a deeper process. And, you know, that's why we're talking. From Olga, our musician, who made the music for the promo. I hope you saw the video this morning that I posted, is the video promo. She's talking about, I think you answered that, but when was the first time that you tried to experience one of your jumps? And when was that time that this need emerged? So,
yeah. It was very, very early. I would say there are two things that stood out. When I was 4 years old and I hit my first jump on skis. It was my first, and actually the way I feel when I jump now is almost is a better version of how I felt when I was four. What was amazing when I was four and I hit that jump, it was my first feeling of almost weightlessness, just kind of like between in that fourth dimension of life. And that's when I understood, like, well, there is this other dimension and aspect of life that you can't get by pushing yourself to the point of no return. And I experienced that. But it was also very terrifying, even during the action, because I didn't have the skills, you know. And I remember, like, I landed and slammed my butt on the back of the ski binding and realized that, you know, air is amazing.
Gravity, yeah. You learn about gravity.
Exactly. but after that, it's almost like I couldn't stop, you know. Like, I broke my arm jumping on my bed and getting flung off and hitting, like, a trash can on the side of it. And but the other time was I was 6 years old, and that's when I did my first big jump, school outing, to the pool. And I, you know, my mother being Dutch, like, she put all her kids in swimming lessons very early on. So I was swimming, you know, pretty hard starting age four, you know. So by six, I was a really good swimmer already for my age. And we go to the pool, and my swim coach is there. And so, and I see he's talking to my teacher, and then he comes over to me. He had a lift like that. He was this big guy called Laurent with blonde hair and a big bright pocket smile and a big lift. And he was amazing. And he was like, "Hey, Matthias, I talked to your teacher and you can come to me in the big end, you know, we can go swim over there. And all the kids, they don't know how to swim. You can leave them in the little kiddie pool there." I was like, "Oh, cool. Awesome." So last thing I know, I'm the only kid swimming in the deep end with my coach. And he was this big, strong guy. I loved him. I wonder what happened to him. Actually, I would love to find his where he is now, because he's, you know, probably an older man now, you know, like probably 50 or 60 anyway. And then he points at the first springboard, like the 3 meter springboarding or five or whatever. And he goes, "Hey, MTF, do you want to jump off this? I think you can." He's like, "Sure." So I get on it. And then as I climb up, I can see the teacher's looking a little concerned, and I jump off, no problem. And I did it like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. And then he goes, "Hey, you see the big board up there? I think he can jump off that." And it was like the 10 meter high dive or 8 meter or something like that. It was really big. And especially when you're six, I was like, "You sure? You think I can?" And he was so dead set in believing that I could, that his confidence, he injected confidence in me by just looking at me so intensely and being like, "Yeah, you can do it," you know? And I was like, wow, I trusted him so much that I didn't question his judgment. If he said I could, it meant that I could. And that's the relationship I had with every coach that I had. My ski coach in ski academy was the same thing. When he told me I could do something, even though it was a joke or whatever, but I didn't know, and I did it anyway. And he was like, "Well, I can't believe you did it." I was like, "Well, it's because you told me I could, so I trusted you. And I just focus on what I needed to do. There's a methodology for it." Bottom of the line, he tells me to go, and I'm like walking up the stairs and getting up the ladder past the first springboard. I'm like, "Oh, shit, we're high." And then I keep going, and then I get to the top and get my toes to the edge of the pool. And then one of the teachers makes, you know, like, sees me and makes kind of like, I can't make eye contact with her, but she sees me from a distance, and we kind of like staring at each other, and she starts webbing. She's like, "No, no, don't jump." And then I look down and my coach is at the bottom, and he's like, "Yeah, yeah, you get this." And I'm like, okay. So obviously I'm like, in that case, I'm like, okay, she's a teacher. She's smart, but she's not the authority when it comes to swimming and jumping. Like, he's the authority. So I'm going to judge I'm going to follow his advice, and I'm going to jump off. And then I jumped off, and it was the first time I felt like I was in the air forever. Nice. I was just falling and falling and falling, and landed so hard. Like, it was kind of hurt, painful. You hurt me a little bit, but it was no big deal, because everything leading to it was so beautiful. I just need to become better at it. And that's the two things that stood out. And after that, you know, I would watch things like Alice in Wonderland, you know, when she falls in the well and she's suspended and falling in the well forever. That looked amazing to me. It's like, I want to fall in a well and fall forever. This looks like the best thing you can do. And then the rest is history with, you know, witnessing what other people were doing in the mountains through movies or whatever.
So, Joe, when you're ready, Super Frenchie's got some questions for you guests. So, Anthony, I think you're first. So
I guess for Anthony first, you know, because being a base jumper as well, So I see that he's a multi-sport athlete, and I really enjoy, the multidisciplinary approach to the mountains, which is where I express myself through skiing and jumping and other things, right? When are we going to see a mountain bike base? I would love to see a full free ride mountain bike line to a big cliff at the end, like pretty much like a mountain biking version of what I'm doing on skis. So I don't know. Are you up to it?
Hey, you know what? Nice. Have you seen his 135K on the snow, the slide?
Oh, I didn't see that. He did it 135K on a mountain bike. That's brilliant. Oh yeah, he's way overqualified for a mountain bike race.
Right. Well, it might be like an invitation in March or something like that.
I don't know if I'll be able to ride a bike off the cliff where I'm going, but yeah, we can talk about it. You know, I'd love to help out. Maybe we can do a duo mountain bike, snow mountain bike base to ski base, like side to side. That could be kind of cool.
That's what we have talent punk is to put people together to do.
It's got to keep the bike on though. You know, like I figured out a way to not throw anything away. I don't throw my poles anymore. And then I made bamboo poles, but I felt bad about throwing something that didn't belong in the mountains. But now I can ski base with my poles. Once in a while, I'll use bamboo poles if I don't really have another choice. And I even made baskets that are biodegradable now. So the whole pole is biodegradable, but now I can actually ski base jump with my, keeping my poles on. So I want him to like, yeah, take off, open his parachute and keep the bike and land and ride away. I mean, awesome. I want him. I would love to see him. I don't want anything, but.
Awesome question. So Anthony, ready? Ready for the challenge?
Oh, yeah. As I said, that's one of my next project. But at the moment, I am trying to be better base jumping. That's why it takes time. That's what I was explaining before. I want to make it in a long term. I don't want to rush to do some stuff and take risk. I just want to do everything in the safest way. So as soon as I will feel okay, and I'm not gonna say, oh, do I have to focus more on bike or more on base jump, or I just wanna be at the exit and say, hey, that's it. I'm just gonna ride my line and then jump to nothing. So as soon as I feel safe with this feeling, I will go. I'm already looking for some place where it can happen, and I have some good exit now. So not so long.
Well, Matthias is gonna be in the Alps in March next year. So you guys can connect, and I'm looking forward to seeing some crazy shots in the future.
That's for sure. March is a period where I do every year. My peak speed is in March or April, when the snow is like really packed.
Yeah.
So I don't know about the thing is riding powder line. I can't with my bikes. So we have to figure out this thing.
Yeah. Do you want to show Lisa's question, Joe, please?
Believe it or not, I've done my fair share of downhill longboarding, especially in Colorado. You know, when I lived there, we'd go down a mountain pass and we'd be going like, 45 miles per hour down mountain passes, which felt really fast to me, which is nothing compared to what some people are doing. But I've always had a lot of respect for skateboarders. But because I could ride a board really fast, you know, I've gone tow surfing and I've surfed like 10 meter waves and things like that too. Like I can't handle a board at fast speed, but I never figured out how to power slide, which is so bad. Like I could do it a little bit, but not at high speed and keep it smooth. So I always had to find a road with a big outrun at the end so I could just burn off my speed on its own, but I had to held it to the bottom. It's either you make it to the bottom or you're going to crash kind of thing, which was kind of all or nothing, I guess, fits me. But how do you develop the skill? How do you slowly build towards being able to power slide at high speed on a road?
Nice, because I'm like you. I want to know that.
Yeah, because I mean, pretty much give me tips and pointers so then I can practice on my own. Because yeah, hey, why not? A longboard downhill longboard base would be sick. So.
Wow. Yeah, down on a longboard based will be really sick as well. It's sad that I don't base jump, but I was actually considering to start a skydive license, but it will take a while before I can do base jumping. But how to power slide? Yeah, it's actually the answer is that it's easier if you go faster, because how faster you go, how less grip you have, and it's easier to break the wheels out. But obviously it's more scary to do it fast, so everyone starts slow anyway. And if you, it's, I think the movement, you have to repeat it a lot of times to get used to in your brain. And I practiced it the first time in the rain, so the grip is less, but you practice the movements, because the pavement, it's really slippery, and it's way easier to power slide, to make your wheels slide over the pavement. And then when I did it in the dry, you have to repeat the same movements, but then a bit more aggressive, a bit more specified, and then it will happen in the dry as well. And then it's just practicing. And right. Yeah. Yeah, of course there are many like tutorials or anything on YouTube, how to practice it. But I would love to explain him once in the mountains.
Maybe you can do a tutorial for Matthias and send it to him.
For him. Yeah, I can do it. Maybe I will do it. Like now there's no snow yet, so actually it's not a bad idea. But like when I practiced it at the beginning, I used a lot of pads, like elbow pads, crash pads, knee pads, because then you're less scared to fall and you push it a bit more. And then slowly you get rid of the elbow pads because they are kind of restrictive sometimes.
And you're in t-shirt after that.
Yeah. And not because it's cool or something, but it's really like a extra, you feel more like able to move.
Yeah.
And actually you feel more fragile as well, so you make sure you don't crash. I think it's hard to explain, but for example with kids when I was teaching as well, like if I put some impact mats on the ground, suddenly they fall off because they know it's safe to fall off. But if it's not there, they don't fall off, so they actually can cross a balancing parkour without falling off. But if there is impact pads, you feel safer and you step off easier, I think.
Nice.
So yeah, that's why I don't wear elbow pads, because in a t-shirt it's a really nice feeling. But practice with, and of course, like Anthony said it as well, wear a helmet. It's 2021, of course. You only have one head, so
yeah,
of course some protection, it's mandatory. You really have to do it, and it's not stupid or something. It's normal.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Joe, the final question for Olga.
And for Olga, well, you know, I love music, and I'm a huge metal guy, you know. I think there is but pretty much I at this point I've opened up to some other genres, but I guess what I seek generally is heavy and dark, because depth comes out of darkness a lot of the time, right? You know, that's the definition of shadow work. You know, I guess we're going back to Carl Jung here, you know. I guess what is the ethos of her music?
Nice. I like that.
Is an ethos to my sport. So what is the ethos to her art, you know? And or is there a different ethos, obviously based on different themes and different songs and things like that, but is there a general direction of what she's trying to accomplish as a music? All musicians in some form are purists, and I have several friends that are musicians, you know. I'm good friends with Gasm Gojira and things like that, you know, and they're awesome guys, but they're very thorough and purposeful and methodical about their art, you know. And and you feel it in their music, and when you're a purist, you have a bigger picture and direction. And I'm interested to see what her picture and her direction is as an athlete, and what the ethos is at the base, at the foundation of that.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah, of course. I'm trying to understand a little bit, because ethos, you know, ethos is a Greek word. And can you hear me, Olivier? Yes.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand what he means by saying ethos. Because in Greek, ethos is when you have like what's the mental, let's say, values or something like that. What do you understand with the word ethos?
Yeah, I think that's what he's aiming to.
Okay.
What is your? So, yeah.
Okay, so as I said before, like personally for me, music is how to express feelings and, you know, things that I remark in the social life and values and things I find important and what's happening in the society. So actually with my art, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to transform everything I see in music. Mm. So that's my ethos. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. That's why I'm composing music, because it's a necessity. I can't do without it. It's a passion, and it's my way to express how I see things and how I feel with things. But yeah, I mean,
no, that's perfect.
Maybe that's the answer. That's a simple answer.
And the perfectionism is talking about is.
The perfectionism in electronic music, it's a very big discussion, like for 1 hour discussion, because it never ends. Like since technology goes better and better and better, it's like it's nonstop. And I love perfection. I am a perfectionist, I think, sometimes, and sometimes maybe not, but I'm trying to do the best I can with technology and whatever I can use for my music.
Nice. Anything else from anyone wants to add something? No? But that's okay. We're coming to the end of our show. Before we close off the show with Olga performing Haze, I'd like to ask you, everyone, so what do you think? Do you get it? Do you get our guest's relationship with adrenaline, risk, and why not death? Do you understand their purpose? Do you find beauty in it? Because as far as I'm concerned, I find a lot of beauty in what you're doing. It's been a big year for Talent Punk. It has been full of unique and kind of colorful talents. I've got a list here. We connected with b-boy dancers, skateboarder, snowboarder, skydiver, slackliner, base jumpers, photographer, aerials, and underwater, mountaineers, downhill skateboarder, parkour athletes, fashion designer, ice climber, free divers, rollerbladers, activist, advocates, adventurers, marine biologist, skier, mountain bikers, singers, songwriters, musicians, artists. I even had my voice featured in a new EP from our friend Deja Lumen, Nico Orion, from Chile, and it's called Future Nostalgia. So please have a look at it or have a listen to it if you are not sick of my voice. I always thought of Talent Punk being more than a live podcast, and someone said to me one day, it's like a cultural cafe, and I hope it is like a cultural cafe. So thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, Lisa, Olga, Anthony, Matthias, followers, listeners. Thank you so much for being part of this little adventure tonight or today. See you next year. Merry Christmas. keep following us, keep supporting us. And yes, I need some sponsors. So if you want to sponsor me, please. And as I say, Ubuntu. And thank you. And yeah, Drew, take it away with Olga's beautiful music.
Thank you for listening to Talent Punk. Keep tuning in to our shows and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us at talent_punk on Insta and Facebook. Ubuntu, we are thanks to you.